Okay, the modern library. I was going through a lot of my books the other day. I've got 200 or 300 I'm going to either give away, take to the library, try to sell to the Strand Bookstore or something.
Right.
And going through all of these books, I noticed I had a copy of the late George Apley, I had a copy of Dodsworth, and I noticed, and a couple of others, and I noticed they were modern library books that I had had since I was a kid. Now, I'm not going to keep them. I just don't have any room anymore, and I've read them. But I know that the modern library has an enormous and distinguished history, and a lot of it is due to your late father, Bennett Cerf. So maybe you can tell me a little bit about the modern library and how it first started.
Well, I'd be happy to, and I too have a lot of old modern library books, and a lot of people keep saying how they grew up on the modern library, and I really did.
You know, probably have a complete collection.
I have close to one. In fact, my dad used to quiz me on the volume numbers the same way other dads quiz kids on batting averages or state capitals. You know, I would learn that Oscar Wilde was number 125 or whatever. But going back to the history, it started 75 years ago, which is why we're reissuing this year. It's an anniversary year. But a man named Albert Bonai started, who was a bookseller in New York.
Is that how you pronounce it, Bonai?
Yes, that's right.
I've heard it Bonnie and I've heard it Bonai.
It's hard. It's somewhere in between, I think. But Bonai, it was Bonai and Liberite was the firm. At least that's the way I've always pronounced it. I don't have scholarly proof that that's the right way.
I think Bonai and Liberite published John Steinbeck's first
book. I believe they did.
Gold.
I believe they did. Yeah, and Theodore Dreiser and a lot of wonderful books. The story of that firm is fascinating too, because Bonai and Liberite didn't get along, and after a year or so, flipped a coin to see who could stay and who had to leave, and Liberite won. But in any case, Bonai was the man who thought of the modern library. He felt that at the time, the classic books that were available in America, A, cost far too much. There were no paperback books then. And he also felt that a lot of the exciting modern European books weren't being published in America at all, or certainly not at prices that anyone could afford. So he wanted to publish things like Oscar Wilde. And that was, I think, the first one that he did, A Picture of Dorian Gray, which is back in the modern library in our new edition now.
Just one second.
Please. Sure.
Just want to double-check our tape.
Oh, sure.
okay. Now, these original modern library editions that were first published in the 1920s, they were inexpensive.
Yes, they cost... At the time that my dad got involved, they were 95 cents, and I think they were even cheaper at first. They may have been something like 65 cents. But in any case, the series started in 1918, and after Bonai and Liberite flipped their coin, and Mr. Liberite won, Mr. Bonai left the business, and Liberite became the head of this. And Modern Library was really the biggest asset of his firm. But he was losing money for lots of reasons. One big one was he was kind of a philanderer, but he started investing in plays on Broadway with the firm's money, and he had a huge hit with his first one, which I guess made him even less cautious, and he began to lose huge sums in theatrical productions that didn't pay out. And in addition, he was having, I'll go back a minute, he was having affairs behind his wife's back all the time, and he had also borrowed money from his father-in-law. That was a rather dangerous combination, because the father-in-law would find out and come in and confront Liberite every day about, how dare you do this? Where's the money? And Liberite would say, I don't know where the money is. And my dad was working for him at the time and sitting through all these meetings.
Your dad, Bennett Cerf, became very, very famous during his lifetime, especially as a moderator. I believe What's My Line.
That's right.
That was where he was really known. He was always
known.
Known
to the public.
He was known to the literary world, of course, but
right.
That made him a celebrity. But he was a young editor, wasn't he?
Yes, well, he had gone into publishing with Bonai and Liberite, and Richard Simon, who started Simon & Schuster, was very influential in getting my dad to go there and to start his publishing career. And he was a vice president in 1925, 7 years after the Modern Library had started, when a really extraordinary day occurred. Can I tell you all this? It might be too long, but you can find parts in it that would be useful. But there was an extraordinary day that my dad used to tell a story about when he had never been to Europe, and he was still in his 20s, and he decided he wanted to go and see Europe. And on his birthday, on May 25th, 1925, was the day he was supposed to sail, and Horace Liberite decided to give him a luncheon party to just the two of them, actually. He took him to lunch to say goodbye and wish him well on his trip. And my dad noticed they went to Jack and Charlie's Speakeasy, which is now the 21 Club in New York. And it was during Prohibition. And my dad noticed that Liverite was quite drunk by the time they got there. And he had another big drink the minute they sat down at the table. And my dad pointed out that Liverite was certainly not a drunk. And he knew something was terribly wrong. So we asked Liverite, well, what's the matter? You seem terribly nervous today. And Liverite said, it's my damn father-in-law. I'd love to buy back that loan and get rid of him. He keeps coming in here and asking me about the affairs I'm having. He has no business asking me that. And I don't know where the money is. He keeps asking about the money. I'd love to buy him out. And my dad just said sort of casually, well, why don't you sell me the Modern Library then? And to his great surprise, Liverite said, what do you give me for it? And they made a deal right at lunch for $250,000, which was money that my father didn't have. But that's another story.
That's a lot of money, though.
You bet.
Especially 1925.
Well, he didn't
have
a lot
of money now, but 1925. $250,000, that's...
Right. But and there's a whole involved story here, but Donald Clufford and my father, between them, Donald was my father's friend from college. The two of them were able to come up with most of that money and to work out a deal. But this is far from over, this story. They went back to the office, and Liverite wanted to sign up the deal, so he called in his sales manager, Julian Messner, who you may have heard of because he became a famous publisher later also. And he called his lawyer, Arthur Garfield Hayes. And these two men saw that this was a ridiculous deal, that it was the heart of Liverite's business, in a way, and that over a lunch, Liverite had decided to sell his prize asset. So they started, you know, arguing totally against my father's position, and my dad saw his whole little dream going up in smoke. And at this moment, something totally extraordinary happened. A man, the word came into Liverite's office that there was a man downstairs with a gun who had arrived to shoot Liverite because he was having an affair with his wife. And Liverite sent Messner out to deal with this guy, and leaving my father without his main nemesis in the deal. And somehow, with just the lawyer there, they talked Liverite into it. So the deal was made. And after, you know, there were a lot of loose ends, but eventually Donald Clufford and my dad did buy the Modern Library and went into business for themselves.
Left Liverite.
Yeah, and the modern library, which Liverite had never focused on the way my dad could, took off and became a huge success once my dad was doing it with Donald Clufford. And a couple of years later, that was in 25. In 1927, they said, well, you know, we have time to publish a few extra books besides doing the Modern Library. So they said, we'll publish a few of our favorite new books at random each year. And that's where the firm Random House came from. They named the extra book part Random House. And sooner or later, that became much bigger than the Modern Library. But the Modern Library was really the root of Random House and my father's business for his whole life.
And the authors had published a wide variety, not just the original European authors that and Liverite published.
That's right. Well, immediately my dad realized that he wanted to make it a more American series and that he wanted to mix some of the great classics, which still were not available in paperbacks. Paperbacks didn't start for another 15, 20 years after my dad started working on the Modern Library. So they wanted to make the great classics of literature available very cheaply, but they also wanted to say, hey, you know, there are other classics. Some of the American books are classics. And of course, some of the things that Mr. Bone and I had been publishing, they also wanted to blend in. So they decided to make it the Modern Library of the World's Great Books, as they called it. And they started adding a lot of things to the series. At its height, I guess they had several hundred in. And a lot of those books are still in print. But with the advent of paperbacks, the series has been a little bit neglected, or taken for granted, I would say, more. That books keep coming out, but no one's really focused on it. And as the 75th anniversary was coming around, Harry Evans, who's now the president of Random House, and several people, Joni Evans, who was the president before he was, and was part of this too.
No relation, by the way.
No relation, right. But the thought was, gee whiz, there really ought to be another look at this. The 75th anniversary is coming, and the idea of buying inexpensive but beautiful reprints of favorite books that you might want to keep, not just read and pass along or throw out. If you could get those for a price that was very similar to paperbacks, was the way we looked at it. And if we made the books readable, reset all the type, and had beautiful covers, we really thought there'd be a terrific market for this. And and it had been ignored. And it would also be a way to point out, again, that some newer books are classics, that we could bring the series back to life. And when they asked me if I wanted to get involved in this, it was a dream come true. You know, this is like very sentimental for me. It was my dad's favorite thing. It's how he started his career. And to have a chance to come and look back on it, it was very, very exciting for me, and to try to carry on the work.
But the modern library over the years never really disappeared.
It's always been there. But in the years, you know, through the 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s, almost any bookstore you would go into had a huge modern library section. And lots of people would come and buy 200 volumes, you know, not lots. But it really was the main way that a lot of people read the classics. As paperbacks, series like Anchor Books or Vintage Books and others came along, it sort of went to the back of the store, or, you know, the books would be divided up and just put in the shelf alphabetically. So it's been there, but people haven't really thought about it as a series the way they used to. And now they are, and we're thrilled with the results we're getting. And it's only been out there 3 or 4 weeks, and I should say we're publishing 27 books this fall, and then we'll be, many of those, but not quite all, are from the original series, but there's some new ones too. And every month from now on, we're going to publish 3 new ones until we get back into, you know, 100 or 200 books, and then we'll see where we are. But it's wonderful fun, and makes you feel good too. And
what does an average edition cost?
Well, it depends on the size of the book, but some of the shorter volumes, for example, Oscar Wilde's Dorian Gray is like $12, and I've seen paperback editions of it that cost that much, you know.
And more,
right. And, you know, some of the modern library giants, which you may remember from your childhood too, those can cost as much as $19, $20, $21, but still, that's quite a bargain when you're buying an 800 or 900 page book.
Now, I noticed in the publicity material that there is quite a distinguished board of directors, of which you are one. Tell me about that.
Well, a lot of wonderful people have wanted to be part of this and are, among them are Susan Sontag, Daniel Boorstin, who, as you probably know, is the former head of the Library of Congress, as well as a wonderful writer, William Styron, whose books used to be in the series and will be again as we expand it, but one of Random House's really great authors over the years, and he's joined the board.
What do they do?
Well, they are active in various ways, but one of the things that they do and all of us are doing are saying, now, what should we really put in here? It's incredible fun, you know, and we're encouraging the public or bookstore owners to tell us, too, you know, that trying to decide what books really deserve to be considered a classic, and also what books the public will want to own and keep or read again, or what books are topical, you know, looking at all the criteria you might come up with, it's terrific fun to say what are the next 3 books, should they be? And a few choices, I think, are very exciting this time. And I find the books are so much fun to see again that you pick them up and lo and behold, you start reading them, even if it's something you read 20, 30 years ago. A good example of that is Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man, which is a book that I read probably in 1956 or something when I was a kid. And I don't think I had any idea then what that book really talks about in the black experience in America. But it's a wonderful novel. I can't put it down. I'm in the middle of it right now. And it's just thrilling to me that to call attention to that book again. It's like publishing it all over again, you know, which you wouldn't quite get if you just put out another reprint paperback. And people are writing reviews as if it's a new book. It's a whole lot of fun. It's a side of publishing that I saw my dad do, but I've never been part of.
I understand there are some people who are serious collectors of the Modern Library series.
Absolutely. There even was a newsletter for a while that somebody was putting out about it. And, of course, I have a lot of the old ones, too, left over from my childhood or from college.
A complete set?
Not quite. I wish it were. But in a way, I think the new books, well, they have the best of the old with some new. But what is most exciting to me in the design, Andy Carpenter and Rochelle Udell did a fabulous design, I think, where the a large picture of the author is featured on the cover of every book, where there are photographs, we have those, or where there are engravings for, you know, older authors.
So you're not trying to replicate the actual book?
No.
The original edition.
Yeah. Well, in many ways it does, in that the books are the same size, but in many cases the type over the years on the plates had broken, so except in the cases where it was in wonderful shape, we've reset it again. And the original end papers were changed many times, but we've gone back to the end paper design that was on the very first books by Lucien Bernard, who designed that. But the jackets are new. Over the years, there have been many different jacket designs, and there's a new contemporary design now that Rochelle Udell and Andy Carpenter came up with, which is, as I say, features a very large picture on the cover and a small photo on the spine as well of the author. And I think a lot of people, when they think of the classics, have forgotten that these books were really written by people. You know, Harry Evans was saying to me the other day that he never knew Nietzsche had a mustache, for example, because you never see a picture of him. And you have to remember that he was a real guy who struggled through writing this book just like anybody else. And to me, it's a really nice touch, especially when you see the whole group of the books together, to really get a sense of who these people were a little bit more than you do in some reprints.
So with three books a month, I guess the future is unlimited.
Right. Well, there's a lot of books from the old series that, of course, we want to reissue, and we'll be doing some new ones as we go along, too.
Do you have to pay Nietzsche royalties?
I don't think so. But we may be, if he's listening, and we've overlooked him, I hope he'll call in.
That is an advantage, I guess. With a lot of the authors there, these books in the public domain, Siren's books, I guess.
Well, no, certainly not.
So he would get some royalties.
Right. But it does mean that because several of the books don't involve royalties, that's one of the ways that we can keep the prices reasonable, by amortizing it over the series. But obviously, living authors or recently dead ones, the royalties would be involved.
Well, it's a wonderful thing, because these are books that I, too, grew up with and still have. So it's a sense of nostalgia for me as well.
Right. And, of course, it also brings back, it's a chance to remember some of Random House's great authors like Faulkner and Styron, Ralph Ellison. These are people that my dad was involved in publishing the first time around. So it's fun to do that again.
I would imagine your father would be very proud to see that Random House has become essentially the preeminent publishing house in the country.
Well, it's certainly one of the few. Can I mention one thing, too, Don, that I think will interest you? I don't know whether it will interest your listeners, but we're doing the Modern Library on disk as well for Macintosh PowerBooks, which is something that I know that you're interested in Mac. So I thought
I
would
tell.
Well, there's a company called Voyager that's quite a wonderful company. I don't know if you've seen their things, but they're doing a series, among other things now, called Expanded Books. And Bob Stein, who's the head of Voyager, realized that when he saw the PowerBook that the screen was sort of the size of an open book page, and that it occurred to him that on a CD, for example, which is not there, but you could carry the whole Modern Library in one CD, but several novels will fit on one floppy disk in text form. So his original idea was, well, wouldn't it be fun to see how a book would look in this form? And they scanned in. I think the first books that they looked at were Jurassic Park, the Crichton novel. And Crichton, when he heard that Bob was interested in publishing it this way, was thrilled, because he's a computer freak, too.
Macintosh computer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker books. Douglas is a good friend of mine.
And another Macintosh.
Absolutely. So Bob knew exactly where to start. But he soon discovered, as when you think about it, you'll realize, too, that once the book is on there, you can do some things with it that you can't easily do with a book that you read in the normal way. For example, if there was a passage you remembered but you couldn't find it, you can just type it in, and as a word processor would, you would scan right to it. Or you could find every reference to a character and the page numbers all the way through if you were doing that. If you were writing a book report or an essay, you could cut and paste or mark passages and paste them into the report. Or you could actually, Bob's designed a little thing where you can put little paper clips on the pages, or dog ear the pages and then go right to the parts you want to find. Or you can put extra information in. You can even put audio in. And in fact, in the Modern Library editions that Bob is doing, we found a wonderful tape of my dad that he did an oral history for Columbia University, and he told some stories about the early days of the Modern Library. And we put a little of that right into the expanded book version of Dorian Gray. So you can click in parts of the introduction and actually hear my father talking about it. And it's a lot of fun.
Will this work on any Macintosh?
It will. It's nice to have one that has a two-page display, because it looks better.
Mm-hmm.
It looks more like a book.
Where do you get these discs?
They're just coming out now. Voyager's coming out with the Modern Library ones, I think, either late October or early November, and they're doing four or five to begin. And what is gratifying to me, of course, is that it's looking forward at the same time we're looking back, and I'm a Mac freak as well. But I'm amazed how interested people are in these. As Harry Evans pointed out, you can now read in bed with the lights out, too, because the screen is backlit.
I'd love to get a hold of some of those books. I spend all my time watching over the computer when I get home.
But I'm sure Bob to send you some. But some of his books, not the Modern Library ones, but some are already out, and they're doing surprisingly well. The whole Hitchhiker, it's called a trilogy, but there are actually five of them with a new book that Douglas is coming out with this month. But the first four are all on one floppy.
And, I've been looking for an E.E. Cummings poem. I have a book, The Complete Poems of E.E. Cummings, and I cannot find it. And I know it's in there someplace, but there's a line called, "I'm a birdcage without any bird." And it was such a poignant poem that I read as a kid, and I saw it in the newspaper, and I clipped it out and lost it. And I've been looking for that poem. I've gone through that book. Now,
if I had that disc, I would type
in birdcage.
And you'd find all the pages. That's exactly right. And, of course, this medium, as it goes, is going to be a wonderful medium for poetry. In fact, I'm ending up doing a Voyager piece here instead of Modern Library. But Bob has got a new disc coming called Poetry in Motion, which uses the new Apple QuickTime thing where you can actually put video into a computer disc. So it's an anthology of new poetry, but you can actually watch the poet read any of the poems that you like and listen to any specific line or the whole thing. And it really does suggest where the medium might go. I don't think any of this is going to replace books as we know them, not quickly anyway, because it's fun to curl up in bed in some odd angle with a book or take it to the beach. But it's a wonderful expansion, and that's why Bob calls them expanded books.
Does he live in New York?
He lives in Santa Monica, but he's here every month. He'd be a great interview for you. I'd love to talk to you about that.
It's a whole new dimension. And I did see, come to think of it, in the press kit reference to it. I didn't pay much attention to it, but that I hadn't even thought about that. That's a whole new show.
Right, and I love the fact, and one other little aspect to it, which has been wonderful for the synergy in between Random House and Voyager, is that because we had to reset type, and because Bob has the most modern optical scanning stuff around, because he uses that for his own products, we were able to do some things together that saved us both money. You know, it's another way we kept the price down on our book. So in a sense, the future is helping the past here.
Yeah, I use a little hand scanner. I don't use it for very much, but if I don't have a photocopying machine. But I notice that if I need to get a document out and mail it real quick, instead of running down to the photocopying machine store down the street, I can scan it.
That's great.
And then I can print it and then mail it, and it's almost as good as a photocopy. Usually I use it for recipes. If I see a recipe in the newspaper, I can scan the recipe.
Which scanner do you have?
It's called Typist. Uh-huh. With graphics, Typist with graphics.
It works pretty well?
It's if the text is good,
right?
It will get it about 90 to 95%. But then you can use the spell check to find any typos. So if the text is weak, for example, if a letter doesn't come out clearly, it'll put a little star or asterisk
there. So you know where you need to look.
Yeah. But every time I scan something, I run it through the spell checker to make sure everything's all right. And poorly designed text or faded text is harder for it. If it's a real crisp letter or a book page or something, there's no problem.
Or a typed document or something.
And it also, then you flip the button and it will do graphics. So you could scan the cover of this book, for example, and make it a photograph. My picture was in Newsday not too long ago when I was doing an interview with an author. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting right here and had this logo behind. It was a great shot of me. And the author was far in the distance. A great shot of me. But I scanned it, I scanned it and put it in the computer. I can print it out anytime I want.
How neat. That's great. I have to get into that technology, too. There's so many toys I want. I don't know where to start.
I know. Well, it was great talking to you again.
Oh, it's fun.
Of course, we always have a lot to talk about. I'm delighted about the Modern Library, and I know we'll do this again.
Great. Well, thanks, Don.
All right. Thank you.